Hi, Steve Artimer here, and welcome to the New Life Live podcast. We hope to provide help and hope in your life through God's Word, counselors, and psychologists as we answer questions from listeners who call with the challenges of life. Let's go to today's episode.
So glad that you joined us today. We've got so much hope and help for your life. That's what we're here for. And joining me today will be Jim Burns and Dr. Jill Hubbard. You can call us. We're going to take calls for 2 hours, 1-800-229-3000. Jim, I love your wisdom. I love your insight. Would you please share with us something that's on your mind today?
Yes. You know, it was interesting when they said 35 years because, Becky, I actually go back to those days. Steve was my good friend. He was just getting started. And I actually came on the show. I was a board member at that point, and I came on the show. I mean, much younger, but I just appreciate what you're doing, your leadership. And I know you didn't ask me to say that, but I really do.
Thanks,
and Jim. I appreciate so much the fact that we can give them hope and some input. Last week, I was on the show last week, and there were so many people who have trouble with enabling their kids, their spouses, their moms, their brothers, their, you know, whatever. And, you know, some people call that codependency. Same thing in many ways. But I wanted to give a couple of thoughts on that. And I wanted to give a principle. And I'm thinking about this with kids, but I'm thinking about it with parents and spouses and everything else, too. And here's the principle. They will never know how far the town is if you carry them on your back. And I think sometimes what we have to do, even when our kids aren't doing it right, or when our spouse isn't doing it right. We had a spouse who was an alcoholic, and the codependent wife was really struggling. And you know, we just can't carry them on our back. It's not good for them. It's not good for us. And when you take that, you know, person off of your back, and you allow them to, you know, sometimes you know struggle, it's the best thing that can be possible for them. We have to be careful not to enable dependency. And a lot of us do that. I'm a people pleaser. We talked about that last week. And us people pleasers sometimes enable dependency. We don't do it on purpose. We do it because we're trying to help. I'm a helper. But what we have to learn, and this is a good recovery term, is you earned it. You know. And so if they made some poor choices, then the best thing we can possibly do is allow them to have the circumstances of their life experience poor decisions that they made, let them experience that. And it's so hard to do because we want to take care of whoever our loved ones are, but sometimes that's not the best thing to do. And so really the goal is to help our spouse, our kids, I'm especially thinking of adult children, help them become responsible adults, help our young children to become responsible one time, eventually adults, help our spouses to become more responsible. And I think we do that by actually, we can help them develop an action plan where maybe we create the goals together. One of the things I've learned as an enabler and as a codependent is that, you know what? People support what they help create. And so we can't create the plan for them. We've got to help them, you know, develop that plan. And sometimes it's just good to be that moderator for them. But the result of enabling is always the same, that there's a failure to launch with adult kids. There's a failure to launch with even younger kids. There's a failure for them to become responsible. There's a failure for the spouse to go get help. You know, we talk about spouses who are addicted to porn, who are, you know, struggling with, you know, alcohol use or whatever. We've got to be able to not enable them so that they can be whole. And there is hope and healing through that process.
I love that, Jim. You know, we were even talking about this yesterday in the idea of boundaries. And we had a caller who was talking about a husband that had a long-term addiction. But the first step was to discover where you begin and end. Because in the enabling process, we can't discern what's ours and what's them.
Right.
And it's always that challenge. I love that insight. And I'm thinking about, you know, who are we carrying to the town?
Yeah, right.
I mean, really and truly, it's just a concept that we all have to look at. We're going to think about that for a while. If you have problems with enabling or codependency or something else, give us a call. 1-800-229-3000. Thanks, Jim. Love your wisdom. We'll be right back.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
I'm Steve Artimer with a New Life Moment. Too often we view our work as a curse rather than a divine calling. renowned author Dorothy Sayers is precisely right in observing that we need a thoroughgoing revolution in our whole attitude to work. Namely, that our work should be viewed not as a necessary drudgery to be undergone for the purpose of making money, but as a way of life in which we find personal delight and magnify God's glory. Sayers believes work should be thought of as a creative activity undertaken for the love of the work itself, that men and women made in God's image should make things as God makes them, for the sake of doing well a thing that is well worth doing. Your work can be a source of personal blessing and a vehicle for glorifying God. Visit me, Steve Arterburn, at newlife.com to explore how. And thanks for listening to this New Life Moment.
I love those insights that he always can pick out. And it's true. Our work is a divine calling. And you know what? We don't define work just by getting a paycheck. It could be something that you are doing, that you are fulfilling that call that God has on your life. And we want to champion that. And we know that God's working in your life. We're grateful for Steve's insights. We're going to go to the calls, and we're going to start with Karen, who's calling us from Allentown, Pennsylvania, listens on WBYN. Hello, Karen. How can we help you today?
I don't have a question, although I don't have a problem with enabling or what else you were saying, but plenty of problems, but not that. But I wanted to comment on Steve's departure.
Yeah.
I was sad. Yeah, I was sad to hear it yesterday. I was shocked. I took me back. Mylan left not that long ago, and I'm a longtime listener, so it's like your family, you know. But I just want to thank him for his years of God-given wisdom, his humor. Mm-hmm. And his rhyming. He just always cracked me up, on the radio regularly. So, I wrote a little poem in his honor.
Oh, please share, Karen. Yes, he would love that.
Would you would love that? Okay. So let me just tell you that it's very simple. It's, very corny. Didn't take long to write. So here we go. So anyway, I have, "Oh, Steve, if you have to go, I hope you know that we love you so. And we all understand that you have a new plan, but I hope you always remember you'll be our man." Amen.
That is awesome.
I love it, Karen. And he will love that too. That is so right up his alley. He will love that.
Yeah. I just, you know what, when I heard yesterday, I tried to call yesterday and I couldn't get through. And, I was like, well, let me try again today. And I just wanted him to know, like, you know, I listened way back in the days of Ben with Meyer Clinic, so
yeah,
it's been
too.
A long time. So,
yep.
And I know he's still going to be involved, but,
yes.
I just wanted to say thank you.
Well, thanks, Karen, for sharing. We love that, and I know that he's going to love that as well. Keep listening.
Make sure
and
he hears the poem.
Okay.
Okay.
I know he will. We will make sure of it. Thank you, Karen, so much for calling. We appreciate you listening all these years. I've been listening since Mid-Earth-Meyer too, and so we're going to continue to listen for the next 35 years. I don't know if I'm going to be around that long, but, I look forward to hearing more and more from New Life. We're so grateful that you called. We're going to continue. Isn't that just like Steve, though? Jim, when you think about Steve would write a poem like that.
Oh, totally. Or he'd write a poem that was so beautiful.
It was.
And he might write a poem that's like, sarcastic or something. I've known him since he was in his 20s. And when I met him, I had two immediate thoughts. One is he's crazy and fun. And he really is. I mean, I remember going to a restaurant one time, just Steve and I, and he went to the microphone and said, "Arterburn, party of two." And all of a sudden, the hostesses are coming like, who is this guy? And he goes, "Oh, I just wanted to get your attention. We're going to sit over here." But the other one is that he's anointed. And his anointing, what's amazing is an anointing is I have so much fun listening to him bring wisdom, because he brings it in such a humble, frankly, way.
Yeah.
And yet also brilliant, like no one. And we are going to miss him. But boy, this team you've got, Becky, around here, I mean, they're good. Really, really good.
And, Steve has talked about this already and will continue to speak into next generation of New Life. We know that so many people are struggling, and we need to continue to offer just God's insight and godly counsel. We need this more now than ever before.
Right.
We are going to go back to the calls. And if you want to call, you can call 1-800-229-3000. We're going to talk with Tiffany right now, who's calling us from Jacksonville, Florida. And it looks like a family member suggested that you call. Tiffany, how can we help you today?
Yes, I'm calling in because I'm trying to figure out a way out and just ask a couple of questions on what I should do. I've been dealing with depression for like, it's really been like almost a year now, a little over a year. I lost my baby's father. He was shot and killed at a car wash. Mm. And I lost the baby at 5 months pregnant. Mm. And it's, and my family, I got up and moved. And it's like my family really don't think I'm dealing with it because I'm always so strong and I'm helping my mom. She lives somewhere else, but it's like when my family see me, they only see the happy me. But when I'm home and in the car, I'm breaking down. I'm really breaking down to the point where it's just been rough to keep dealing. Like the baby would have been one, and you know, it's been over a year since he died. And it's just been rough. And I'm praying. And it's, I've been in deep depression the last 2 weeks till I felt like giving up.
Oh,
so I have
Tiffany.
To reach out. My mom was listening at you guys. And it's weird. I called her. She put the radio right up to the phone when I needed it the most.
Oh.
And this was, I think, 2 days ago. Or was it yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
And she don't even know that it's been that rough.
Mm.
So she was like, you got to call this member sometime. Mm. This is a great, you know, ministry. So here I am.
Well, Tiffany, we can hear the pain, and it's a lot. That first year after a loss is always pretty significant. Jim, how can we help Tiffany?
Well, Tiffany, first of all, I'm so glad you called, and I'm so sorry for your losses. This is not one loss. This is a lot of losses. And I want to say something really clear. You're supposed to be depressed right now. Okay, you've had this real tough. Now there's going to be a light at the end of the tunnel, but you know that this is normal. If you lose your baby's father, you lose the baby. You've moved. All those are huge losses. And so you don't have to be today. You don't have to be the person who's up for your family. And you don't have. I mean, again, you want to work through it. But I want you to know that God, you know, Jesus wept at the death of a friend. And if Jesus wept at the death of a friend, then Jesus weeps for you with your loss. And so I'm talking more as a pastor than a counselor right now. But I want you to know that he's present with you. He wants to walk through this with you. And the very best thing you can do is lean into that grief, get the help that you need. And you're going to come out on the other side different, yes. But, you know, in a sense, they'll be better. Will there be a hole in your heart? Yeah, there's going to be a hole in your heart. But I want you to know that God weeps with you in this time. And and that's important to hear that, you know, our God is so sensitive and so caring that he literally wants to walk with you through this. So when he says to you, and it's in the scripture, I will never leave you or forsake you, that's what he's going to say. And also, you definitely don't want to do it alone, especially a neat person like you who, you know, you're the up person and everybody's like, why isn't she fun anymore? Well, you will be. But, you know, this is your time to grieve. There's a time to grieve and there's a time to have joy and to dance and sing. And, you know, this is your time to grieve. And when you grieve, you're going to be healthier. If you don't grieve these incredible losses, then I don't think you're going to be, you know, as healthy as if you do grieve it and so feel it. But don't do it alone. Do it with people around you. Do it with a counselor. Do it with pastors. Yeah. Do it with your family. Do it with friends.
I need it with the counselor because the family at this point is kind of like the opposite. They think that I'm okay.
Yeah.
They think that so they don't drive here to check on me. Mm-hmm. They don't come and see. They think I'm fine.
Yeah.
But the last 2 weeks, I've just been wanting to give up.
Yeah, don't give up.
Harder than ever.
Yeah.
Tiffany, did you say that you do have a counselor that you're seeing?
No, I don't have a counselor.
Okay. All right. Well, like Jim said, you cannot do this alone. You have to have somebody helping you. And we will get you connected with somebody. And also, you know, grief recovery groups, we talk about this all the time, whether it's Grief Share or one of our life recovery groups that focuses on grief. Carrying that weight with other people can help. The reason why your family doesn't recognize this is because you covered up really well, right? Yeah. It's, you know, yeah. They don't really know what's going on for you. And I think if you, I think it's so hard after you've carried some major losses like this. Plus, you mentioned that you moved. Is that yeah. right, Tiffany? Did you move too? Oh, did we lose
her? She might
her?
Be gone, but she said that I wrote that down, that she had moved. Yeah. And that's a loss.
Yeah,
you know, that
I'm
puts,
here still. Okay. I moved here and left where I was at when I lost right. the baby and him trying to better myself and get clear, like just clear my mind and not see right. the places that I was seeing all my life. And
right.
I moved, but it's like when I moved, it's like I had to kind of deal with it on my own because mm-hmm. like people will call and say, how are you today? I'm like, I'm doing good. You know, I would go out and buy this nice stuff for the house. I was working myself crazy, 3 jobs. So it's like now it's hitting me till some days I can't even get up for 2-3 days. I'm missing right. work. I lost my first job. But
well, so Tiffany, let's get a plan to get better. Okay. You're not going to do this on your own.
Right.
We're going to get you connected with a counselor in your area, a life recovery group, or you can go to griefshare.org. That'll help you get connected. And I also want to recommend that you go to a care provider, physician, because what happens is in extended depression, your body is responding to it as well. And that's why, you know, you may be needing medication to help support you in this process. It's not always forever, but you've had just layered grief. And what we yes. don't realize about grief, and we don't talk about this enough, is that it's, yes, this grief, the multiple losses that you've had, but it's any other previous grief that hasn't been resolved starts to get picked up on with the, it's like a snowball effect. And that's where that depression starts to set in because we don't process it. I'm going to send you a copy of the Life Recovery Workbook on Grief as well. And we're going to get you connected with some help. Tiffany, we're praying for you. And please stay in touch. And I'm so grateful that your mom thought of us to help you get further down the road. And we are looking forward to hearing a better report from you. We're going to go back to the calls and we're going to talk with Darlene, who's calling us from Washington, D.C. And she watches us on YouTube. And if you're watching us on YouTube, hit that like button and subscribe. It helps get the word out about New Life. And Darlene, how can we help you today?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. And I am praying for Miss Tiffany.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad that New Life is a place that we can come. And I've come to New Life by phone and in person for years and years. And I just wanted to say that the first time I met Steve Arterburn, I had traveled quite a ways and I was homeless at the time. And I stood in a long line, you know, to meet him, and also had a little birthday card for him. And when I got up in my place in line and spoke with him, he was so compassionate, and he, you know, he was pleasant like he always is. And then he asked me, so what brought you here today? And I said, I took 3 buses. And he kind of, you know, has this gesture with this countenance, this mm-hmm. face. And right. and he just looked and he said, 3 buses, huh? You know, like you came a long way to see this today, you know. And he's always going to be a comfort, you know, to my heart and my mind. And at that event at Church of the Redeemer in Gaithersburg, they had refreshments, they had free mm-hmm. books. I met everybody. It was wonderful. So I thank him, and I'm so relieved that he finally got a little time off, because his health
yes.
is more important than,
yes.
you know, than anything,
thank you.
Really.
Thank you, Darlene. Thank you so much. For keep listening, because he'll be around. But, you know, his wisdom lives on in you and us. You know, Steve's got, his insight is just, it's amazing. And we've all benefited from it. And we will continue to do what he has done before us. We'll be right back.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. You know, one of the things that we are excited about is how people support the ministry so that, you know, so many people need help and hope, just like you've heard already today on the call. We've got people who are listening who are in need of direction and support, and that's what New Life is all about. We've got a matching gift campaign, and we had a group of donors that seeded that with $400,000. And that means that every dollar that you give up to that amount will be doubled and will make an impact on the lives of so many people. We want to invite you to be part of what God is doing through New Life. And you can make your gift at newlife.com/donate. You can call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE, or you can text the word match to 28950. And, you know, we are so grateful for all of that. Along with that, in the month of May, we have a gift of, if you give a gift of $100 or more, we have the Every Woman's Bible that Misty Arterburn, along with other co-authors, did, the thoughts and the devotionals that are in the Bible. It's a really incredible women's Bible that I think that you'll, you know, be encouraged by. And if you want to get a copy of that, we are offering that in the month of May for $100 or more. Actually, it's from now until May. You know, it's only April, even though it feels like whatever day it is, right? I mean, we used to blame it on the pandemic, but we don't do that anymore, do we? We are going to go back to the calls. You can hear Jill giggling.
Yes.
And I'm glad she's here
I'm
with
here.
Us. We're going to talk with Paul, who's calling us from St. Louis, Missouri, listens on Sirius XM. Hello, Paul. Thanks for calling. How can we help you today?
Well, I have I got a family dynamic that we're trying to navigate. My wife and her mother, my mother-in-law, they're having an estrangement right now. They're not talking. It's kind of a silly thing, but mom will not engage with the daughter, and now the kids are starting. I mean, it's gone over a year now, and the kids are starting to ask, when will we see grandma? Can we see grandma? And we're just not sure how to approach this because grandma has hurt my wife. And, you know, we're not sure what grandma's intentions would be if she had the kids and how she would maybe try to cast light on mom or what have you. So I'm just curious what your folks there think the best way to approach this.
Well, that's a good question, Paul. Sorry for that struggle. Jill, how about you?
Yeah.
Well, Paul, I'm wondering, first of all, have you been able to have any dialogue with your mother-in-law?
Yeah, I haven't really attempted, but I probably could.
Mm-hmm. It seems, especially your kids are asking, they don't know what's up with grandma. It's surprising to me that grandma isn't missing her grandkids.
We find that interesting as well, but I think she has the impression that, you know, because the relationship with the daughter, my wife, is such that she can no longer have a relationship with the kids.
So,
we've never said that.
Right. So what you're telling me is everybody's gone to their corner and people are assuming a lot. And the more people are separated and isolated, the more people draw their own distorted conclusions. And so it just perpetuates the problem and people feel rejected and hurt and it cements things. I think there needs to be some sort of intervening. And perhaps you would be the ideal person to break the ice and ask your mother-in-law, hey, it's been a year. Can we chat? The kids are really asking about you. And I want to make sure we're on the same page with what's happening here. And quite frankly, I'm not sure what page we're really on.
Right.
Right? And have that conversation.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have a feeling, too, that I may be part of the blacklist at this point. But,
okay.
Because I was part of what instigated the breakup or whatever you want to call it. So,
Paul, could you clarify what the breakup was about?
It's actually quite silly. We've been traveling the hour and a half every Christmas to her place and dragging all of the children who are now, some of them grown and in all over the state, and decided we would have Christmas at our house moving forward. You know, we're allowed to make that decision. We felt, you know, I've got kids from age 7 to 28, and we feel like it's time to start hosting at our house and doing Christmas, you know, our own Christmas traditions. She was adamantly just, I mean, put off by that, and went so far as to put words in my mouth and say that I told her that we didn't like it there. And this, it was just crazy. And now she hasn't talked to my wife or me in, you know, over a year. You know, she went a whole year, and then, you know, a couple months before Christmas, sent a really long, hateful text with a bunch of stuff in it. And, you know, my wife's kind of done with it. And
that's so sad.
She's put the ball in mom's court, and mom's not doing anything with the ball.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul, you can hear the music. We're going to come back after the break, and we'll talk more about this. Okay. But I love that description, Jill, that everyone went to their corners. And the hard part about this, and Paul will talk about this, obviously, but it's who's going to break the ice? And, you know, how do we go forward? But, boy, I tell you, we talk so much about estrangement in families, and it's for various and sundry reasons. Christmas might be one of them. Like I said, we're going to be back after this. We're going to continue taking calls, 1-800-229-3000. Hey, if you're a part of Club New Life, we've got a Zoom next Monday, April 26th at in the evening. You're going to be hearing from Steve. You can join with the other Club New Lifers. If you're not part of Club New Life, you could join today and be part of that event. We'll be right back after this.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now, let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
Glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We are talking with Paul, and before the break, we were talking about how we hear stories of estrangement all the time, and we're going to see if we can get some resolution on that. Jill, do you want to start?
Well, just to continue, I was also wondering, Paul, because holidays are typically sacred to moms, they're quite special, and you've waited a long time to change things. I wonder if you've reflected on how it was perceived. Are you all the only family that lives an hour and a half away? Are there siblings that live close to mom? Does everybody kind of circle around mom? What are the dynamics? Was mom included in the change? There's a lot of things that, that, you know, come to mind in terms of why and the timing of doing this change. Sometimes in some families, there's a morphing of passing the baton where you don't take the special event away, but you say, okay, we're going to do this part of Christmas here and this part here with you, and we want to help and start spreading it around. It can be perceived as a major rejection if you say, our family is going to go do our own thing and we're going to not include the rest of the family. So just some things for you to reflect on in how it was presented so that you can own your part, because I think that's important. Your mom, your mother-in-law was really, really hurt. Even if she's acting in a way that is unacceptable, you still have to acknowledge how hurtful that is for her when she's done it. It's been her tradition. And mothers hang on to that because it's very difficult when our children leave the nest and we no longer hold that important spot. Our role changes. And so having certain events is part of keeping some continuity to the life of motherhood.
Right. No, I do appreciate that. And, you know, we did not exclude her. We just wanted to change the venue. Mm-hmm. And part of it is the fact that, you know, when talking to our children about that holiday, the children aren't enjoying the holiday. They don't want to be a part of it there because it's a thing now, right? So we wanted to change it up and get everybody in one place where they're all centrally located. And, you know, I clearly she's upset about it. And I get that.
So but I have a different question, though, Paul. I have a different question. So I get that she's upset about that. And I get that you are aware of that. What I'm curious about is no conversation between that decision and now. That's more curious to me.
Yeah, I mean, things were kind of weird for a while. She did show up for some events to see the kids do some things. And then, you know, as Christmas approached, and this was, you know, almost a year later after sharing this after the previous Christmas, we get this really long and very kind of hateful text. And it casts some light on me that's very inaccurate and my wife as well. And yes, she has another daughter who's in that town where she's at, and that's also part of the whole dynamic, you know? But, again, I have three kids who no longer live at home or that are in different parts of the state, and they have extended family that they now need to go visit.
Right.
And it's become untenable to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become a rush through the holidays instead of an enjoyed shared holiday.
So
we thought,
Paul,
we had a reasonable, you know, plan.
Right. Well, and to Jill's, she's had a reaction to this. Jim, what I'd love for you to talk about is that whole, like, let's not be a one topic, because this is like in reverse, right?
Sure. Totally. Totally. You know, Paul, I totally get this. It's hard. You didn't make a bad decision. Maybe I don't know how it was portrayed, but you know, you're not responsible for her poor feelings. You're not responsible for that, you know, crummy text. And I want to go back to what Jill said too. You know, when she said maybe the approach, and it could be you, and she used the word intervention, and an intervention isn't putting your mother-in-law down, but just simply saying something like what she said: "Hey, the kids have been asking about you, and they would love to see you. How can we rectify this? What?" You know, obviously this isn't going well. You don't want to be estranged from your daughter and from the grandkids, and they love you and your daughter loves you and everybody's gone to their corners. Use Jill's words. Those are good words.
Right.
But say, what can we do? Now, when she attacks you, can you take it and just kind of go, you know, again, I'm sorry if we missed, that's not what I meant to say. This is not, or that's not how it came across. I didn't mean it in this way. And you don't even have to kind of justify it because, again, you might be able to talk more about the love that the kids have for her and on and on. Now, there are ways to handle this. And one literally is in that conversation. You may not even have the big conversation, as Becky just mentioned, about that particular topic because there's something behind this. And so, you know, find out what that is. And honestly, this isn't your time to tell her why she's wrong. Not that you're going to hopefully do that, but it's your time just to listen. Listening is the language of love. You showed her some love. How can we, this is called problem solving. How can we rectify this situation? I mean, in our family, you know, our daughter announced that Christmas was going to be at her place. We were more than welcome to come, but it was going to be, they've got little kids, you know, the Christmas tree, the presents and all that. I totally get that. So we just chose to have Christmas on a different day. Jesus wasn't even born on the 25th, if our listeners don't know that. I mean, it was probably sometime more in like the fall. So the point that I'm saying is maybe you can even rectify it because there is family over there, is that, you know, it's an hour and a half drive. It's an event, but maybe that event in our family, it typically takes place somewhere between December 10th and December 17th, where the whole Burns, my last name, Burns family comes together. We're there for 3 hours. We have a blast. It's fun. And then we're gone. And then it's expected that our traditions on the 24th and 25th are kind of done on our own. Now, my kids kind of come in and out of that. But the point being is the whole family does it a whole different time. So if and again, it's a sacrifice on your all's part, but, you know, there's an afternoon sometime where you could go to that place for an hour and a half and celebrate Christmas and pass the presents and let her your mother-in-law, you know, bask in the fact that the kids are there and that they're happy to see her and that there's gifts. So there's other ways to do this problem solving. And I mentioned this earlier, people support what they help create. Maybe she and you can create something that's different, that's absolutely going to work for her.
Well, and I think, Paul, if you could humbly come to her and say, and even own more than your part, we probably didn't handle it in the best way. And really apologize for that and that her feelings were hurt. And say, we really didn't know what to do. Half of our kids are grown and have in-law families now. We are an hour and a half away. And maybe she's mad that you moved away, too.
Yeah.
And say, what would you have had us to do? Because we want to spend Christmas with all of our kids as much as possible. And that was no longer going to work. Did you have maybe a better idea of how we could have handled it?
Yeah. And with adult kids, see, they do have these other things.
She
understands that. She may not accept
she's
it or like
against it.
But she understands that with adult kids, they have other – they got to go
well,
see the other side.
Well, yes, because,
Paul,
what about your family? Are your parents still living? And do you see them?
Well, it's a completely different dynamic. I have a mom and a sister still, you know, with us, and they're totally okay with whether they see us or not. It's not a deal to them. So they're like, whatever, do it the week before. We'll all see each other. It's all good. And I think there's a lot more to this than just the Christmas. Christmas was like the lighting of the powder keg. And and when Mom took that stance, it brought up everything my wife and her mom have had between them.
Mm-hmm.
And they've both – and they've even gone to counseling. But – Mom will not get in the same room as the two daughters to talk it out.
No. I'm thinking, Paul, we're going to send you a copy of Jill's book, Forgiving Our Fathers and Our Mothers, because I think this is a bigger... See, isn't that funny? Because we're talking about Christmas. That was the powder keg, right, Paul? But this is part of...
The straw,
Yeah, and it's a bigger story, and I think Jill's book will be helpful in this healing process, but I love your heart to really understand what can we do. I love what Jim and Jill have suggested, and I know that other listeners have similar situations, you know, where it's like we were all together and then we weren't, and we don't know how to cross that bridge, and it's going to be one awkward conversation at a time. And I love what you said, Jill. Be prepared. You know, just over-apologize, not because you're taking all the responsibility, but you're literally offering that olive branch because for the greater good, you know, that's where you got to, you know, lean into and do the best. You know, I tell you, it's the conversation that we have all the time. How can we heal our families, heal our communities, heal our nation, heal our world, when we can't have these difficult conversations? We'll be back after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. You know, you hear us say all the time that recovery is for everyone and everyone can benefit from life recovery. We connect people with life recovery groups. You know, we have almost, we have over 600 groups across the country. And we are adding to that number all the time because we know that community and process groups is part of our healing journey. And, you know, we have our Life Recovery Today program. And on today's episode, Steve is sharing recovery principles that can help you get through life struggles. If you missed it on NRB this morning at 9, you can go to liferecoverytoday.net. Or we have a bunch of episodes on our YouTube channel as well. We are always grateful to offer that insight, and I know that you'll gain a lot of knowledge from that as well. We're going to go back to the calls. We're going to keep taking calls, 1-800-229-3000. We're going to talk with Maria, who's calling us from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hi, Maria. Thanks for holding, and how can we help you today?
Hi, thank you. Yes, just really quick. I have a son. He graduated in 2019. He got a job, saved $10,000, but over COVID, he gained over 100 pounds. And so he went through this really hard mental health issues, and he even got on the phone with the 800 suicide line. He wrote a suicide note. I mean, he quit his job. So a lot has happened, and he eventually went to the doctor, and he got on depression medication, and he was seeing her every week because he didn't want to see a counselor. And eventually he did start counseling, and he went for about 3 months, and it was all online. He doesn't want anybody to see him. He doesn't want to work. He doesn't want to do anything. You know, doesn't work on his health, doesn't get on the treadmill, you know, none of those things. And he's just so low. And so, I guess my question now is, what do I do? Because my husband, which is his stepfather, is like, you know, he's a well-abled body. He needs to get a job. You're enabling him. And basically is telling me, you know, either he gets a job or I can't live here. I can't live like this. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, and it's not because of him. It's because of you. You need to do something. You're the only one that can do something. And so, you know, I'm stuck thinking, okay, so what do I do? Just say, you have to get a job. And when he says, well, I'll just kill myself or I'll run away or whatever, then I'm just supposed to say, yeah, okay. You know, I can't do that. And he'll be 24 this year. And he does try to eat right. He tries, like right now, he just recently started running at the park at night when the sun goes down so nobody will see him. He literally thinks kids his, you know, that he went to school with are videotaping him or putting him on TikTok, that people are laughing at him. He went with me to the grocery store one time and stayed in the car. And he's like, Mom, I thought I saw so-and-so. And, I mean, they're pointing at me. They're laughing. And I said, if they're not, Seth. I mean, how do you know? Sorry. How do you know? You know? And anyway.
Well, Maria. He doesn't have proof. We're coming up against the end of the show, and I don't want to run out of time for Jill and Jim. And this is a situation that's really, it's difficult because he's dealing with mental illness. Right. Jill, how would you direct Maria in this?
Maria, I'm so sorry. And this is so difficult. So many kids in this age range really, really struggle. You're describing some paranoia. Is he doing anything besides the antidepressants? Does he do any self-medicating?
No. Well, you know what? He stopped the depression medication not too long ago.
Okay.
He said it was making him feel terrible. As far as self-medicating, that $10,000, he paid his phone. He did everything. He lost his car in a hailstorm. And so he now he was drinking, but then, of course, he's living with us, so he couldn't do that. But now he's out of money. Like, he has no money.
But I just want you to be aware of I want you to be aware of that, because that can increase the amount of paranoia. Also, the isolation increases paranoia, right? And the self-hatred that he has.
Yes,
and that the focus is that he is the state of his body.
Yes.
That he isn't more than that.
Right.
In terms of his self-concept. Go ahead.
Yes, and I agree. Can I tell you that just the other day, and this is why I'm calling, he shaved his head. Like, he had long curly hair, and he just shaved it all off. And he said, I just did it because I need to learn to do hard things. And I hate my, you know, he hates the way he looks, but he loves his hair. So he shaved his head. And so I just don't even know what to think about that.
Well, Maria, you need extra help. I mean, there's a part of me wonders that if inpatient wouldn't help, but he can't do this on his own. Mm-hmm. You can't do this on your own. Jim, this kind of goes back to what you started the show with today.
Right. And it's so tough. I love your mother's heart. I love that you are caring for him the way you do. Sometimes our deep love can get in the way because we do start worrying about, well, he's going to commit suicide, he's going to become homeless, whatever. I think your husband is onto something, that maybe one of the things you can do while you have – he needs to get help. And the online thing isn't working for him, and the not taking the medicine isn't working for him. Obviously, there are some issues, emotional, mental issues that he's going to have to work through. But – I think you help him develop a plan. And again, don't you do the plan for him, but help him develop a plan. And in that plan is also then you and your husband can help him through the process. If he's not willing to get the help, then you may have to create a crisis for him, because people change when there's a crisis. So if you create a crisis, it's a crisis for you too, by the way.
Right.
Because your fear is you know, probably he's probably not going to kill himself. He's probably not going to do this stuff. But because of this situation, you know, you do want to put people around you. So you get the help you need. They can help you develop a plan. And but have him help with that too. He has this desire. He's doing unique things, like shaving his head is just. And he said that's because I need to do hard things. Well, he does need to do some hard things, but probably it has nothing to do with the hair.
Well, and maybe the next hard thing, since he's done that, the next hard thing is to go to a therapist in person and let one person see him. And Maria, you might even say, let's go together because I need help. And I would confess to him that you feel stuck in this dilemma and a little bit held hostage by his threats, but that you want to you want to help him and not enable him and keep him stuck. And that means hard things are facing some realities of what is and facing your fear and doing it anyway.
Yeah. And well, Maria, if you do it on your own, because he won't go. Go on your own, and then you can say, "Hey, you know what? This is a really nice person. This person understands what we're going through, and I want you to do me a favor, and I want you to come one time, and you and your therapist then talk through that. Talk what that meeting's going to be like, and how we're going to kind of take a little baby step here." But he does need that help. But he also needs the expectations. You don't play the movie forward. This isn't going to work 5 years from now. It's not going to work 5 months from now. So
I think I would even suggest, Maria, not just you go with him. I think the three of you need to go, because what's going to happen is you're going to go to the therapist and you're going to have to come back and report to your husband. And it just, we've all got to get on the same page, as well as what Joe was talking about with therapists. But he can't make the decision to stop his depression medication on his own.
Right.
He's got high anxiety. You can hear that in just some of the things that he's talking about, which is developing that paranoia. And all of this is not something that we just will ourselves out of. That's one of the challenges of mental illness is it starts to grow, and in going untreated, it just gets worse. I mean, we talk about that all the time. We are going to send you a copy of Understanding and Loving a Person with Depression, and we're going to pray for the situation, Maria. Thank you, Jill, for your insight. Thank you, Jim. And thank you, listeners. If you're on hold, wait there. We'll be right with you. Call us 1-800-229-3000, and we will answer your call. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you'd take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.